When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Yes, friendly reminder, I'm still here, Ben. Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
that's right.
Yeah. You are still here. You always will be here. You know, it's been so long since we've been doing this particular intro, but I feel like it's only just now slowly dawning on me just how self-centered this intro actually is.
Well, that's the whole shtick, I think, you know. On the rare occasions, though, when I am allowed to host the show and do the intro, you would think that it is my full-time job and the show is all about me.
Yeah. it has always been this way. I am the host.
Right. There is nothing weird about it. It's completely how it always is.
Yeah. But we are co-hosts.
We are. Yes, exactly. We are
We're in it together. Yeah. We do this same amount of energy.
Absolutely.
Injected.
Yes. So same amount of energy. Mostly, yeah, that was... I mostly started that way, though, because this is just like one of my tiny pet peeves that I wanted to touch on. Whenever this is a friendly reminder that whenever I see tweets that start with friendly reminder, it's like whenever you see that, you can almost bet that it's
altogether not that friendly.
It is not that friendly.
And maybe just a scooch condescending.
It's and by scooch, it's like I would say mostly.
Yeah,
I would say if it starts with friendly reminder thing, it's mostly just like, hey, don't forget to feel bad.
Right.
That's
right.
Basically what that tweet says, and it's just like whenever I see that out there, I'm just like, oh my god. So yeah, that's my friendly reminder about friendly reminders.
So it's funny because literally the thing that came to my mind is that if I scroll back through my photos from today in particular and look at my on this day for the past several years, you will see a very common photo every single year on this day.
Really?
Which is the writing on my hand that says it's April 1st.
Did you write it today?
I did not write it today, but this is I do tend to do this. I think it's been one of the byproducts of not being on social media is my new social media is my own camera roll. So a lot of times I will literally go back into my own photos and scroll back at all these different happenings and whatever.
Right.
And so I stumble across the it's April 1st photo fairly frequently, but I do think this is one where it's like, hey, friendly reminder, it's April 1st.
Right. Yes.
just for those of you going out in the world today, something's gonna come up, will be said.
That sounds the exception that proves the rule. That is a real friendly reminder. If you tweet today, friendly reminder, it's April 1st, that is helpful.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's like, don't forget, because there will be something. So it always reminds me though of very early on in, Super Carlin Brothers when, you made a video titled Ben Quit.
Oh yes, this was one of our April 1st videos.
And what's so funny about it is you did such a great job of crafting a narrative, because at the time, realistically, it's so funny because it's like the narrative that you crafted was in some ways almost like my own best case scenario.
Right. So I want to say the situation was that at the time I was working at the concert venue and you were doing aquarium stuff.
Yes.
And what I said in the video was that you had like attracted the attention of some sort of high profile client like out in California, and it was just like so much money that it would be ludicrous to say no to.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. And I think, you know, like this is like one of those big ones where like at that stage, obviously not knowing that being on YouTube would ultimately like sort of become like what I did for a living, you know, in that particular regard, it was really funny because I was like, this is a very compelling explanation because I wouldn't mind if this just ended up being
true.
Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I was spending all day, every day doing everything I could to try to figure out a way to make a living doing this aquarium work.
Right.
That I was and doing. That was my main focus.
And you had like interned with people down in like Florida who basically had that gig already.
They essentially did. Yeah.
Who
they
had like homes in, you know, the Florida Keys or wherever. And this is like their vacation home, and they have it's Florida, so we have a reef tank, and you know, it's Michael Jordan. So
yeah, right. They've got, yeah. Like lots of like super high profile celebrities, right, and like private islands. Then they did the aquarium at like the Smithsonian. So like if you ever like are in DC and you walk in and you see the big exhibit in there, like that was them. So I mean, it was really, yeah, you're exactly right. It was like, I think from the layers that I was graduating, it was almost like I was working at like my Petland job at like, you know, in high school, and that was like, yeah, elementary school. And then our family purchased this saltwater aquarium store in like a nearby town that like I ended up running through college, and that was sort of like middle school, high school type stuff. And then I think once I started interning with this group down there, I just skipped undergrad altogether and was like, right, in my PhD program,
right,
for like, yeah, aquarium care. So it was like the massive leap forward from like going and like scrubbing people's fish bowls to going and working for a guy who ironically referred to his multi-thousand gallon aquariums as fish bowls was sort of like the trajectory there. But yeah, so at that point in time, I remember watching that video and I was like, wow, this is so compelling. And also there's a part of me that wants it to happen.
right. I think that was also part of the, like, I remember like when I was writing it, it was like, part of the lie was like, you know, I was like so excited for you, but just like sad that, you know, the video project would just have to come to an end or whatever.
Right.
Just like, oh man, you know, Ben's crushing it. It's great job. Good job. You know, this is the only downside, basically.
Right. Is that we're not going to continue to do this.
To
thing
do
anymore.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. But so anyway, fortunately we did continue, but
we did.
It's always one of those where like, you know, if you're deciding between like which of the colleges you were accepted to and, you know, you go to one and then sometime down the line, you're like, man, what would have happened if I'd gone to the other one? You know, I feel like that's a lot of like how I feel like that like trajectory felt, because I basically graduated from college in 2012 and like was entering into that world and attempting to do aquariums full time. And then like, it just so happened to be the case that the format for our YouTube show that we were also doing was so intensive that it was impossible for it to not also be taking a rather considerable piece of my energy. So it was like, at the same time, I feel like probably if I had 100% to give, I was giving 50 to both.
Right.
You know, and it was kind of like one of those, like, one of these things can go one way or the other. But at that point for me, I was like, there's no way that what's about to happen is the YouTube project is the one that,
right,
that ultimately goes somewhere. But it did.
It did. Here we are.
So there we go. Yeah. That being said, I did order like a whole bunch of seahorses just last week for an aquarium project.
It is astonishing. I think you get recognized more in Roanoke for the aquarium stuff than you do for YouTube.
I definitely think that's true.
I will meet so many people and they'll be like, oh yeah, you don't. Yeah. And do you do the aquarium stuff? And I'm like, that's my brother. And I'm like, I can't believe the number of people that know that one of us does aquarium stuff.
I know. I think it's gotta be like that, like it's like the quirky, highly rememberable, unlikely, like, attribute.
Right.
I think,
but you would think YouTube would be that too.
Well, you would think that. That's a good point. Maybe it's probably more of what's happening is people are less attuned. The people who are asking are probably less attuned to what it is we're doing on the internet. Which arguably is the larger of the two feats.
Arguably.
Arguably. Yeah. Yeah. There's maintaining local aquariums, mm-hmm, in Southwest Virginia.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, doing this little video project.
Yes. Yeah. Which is not to say that, like, obviously there are people who know, but actually I have a funny situation that I feel like will speak to you directly,
okay,
that has happened to me over the past several months and is tangentially related in
regard. Okay. Lay it on me.
Okay, so I'm sure you will recall several months ago, I'm gonna remove all names and specifics from this story just for the sake of people involved. So several months ago, you and I were invited to, I guess what was eventually to be known as a pitch meeting.
Yes.
Yes.
You're correct. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I know exactly where we are.
Yes. Okay. And so we went into the situation thinking that it was almost like the founding of like a group of people who wanted to do a thing here in the area.
Right.
And this was sort of like the, all right, we have all the players in the same room. Everyone here cares about this. This is like, you know, let's form a thing. But, and you know, so we went in, that was sort of what I thought that meeting was going to be about.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yep.
It turns out not to be about that. So it was like that for the first, I would say 95% of the meeting. Everyone's just shaking hands. Hey, nice to meet you. Where do you work? What do you do? Oh, awesome. Cool. Great. Everyone's just sort of getting to know each other. Here's our vision. Someone had put together this like big PowerPoint and they went through it and it was like very compelling. And it was like, yes, great. It all seems doable. It seems like if we come together, we can make this PowerPoint happen.
Right. Yes. Right. Yes.
And then just like what felt like out of nowhere, like, and it seemed like everyone else in the room knew it was coming. They just sort of turned their heads at us and were like, so we're looking for like this sort of large dollar amount to get us started. Carlin's. And it was like,
like I looked behind me to be like,
does someone else here?
Does someone else here have a large amount of money?
I know. It was like, are you asking us? What? No. What?
Right. Right.
Like, I don't know what the perception was. Or what the I don't know how we landed there, but for whatever reason, this was the true goal of the meeting, was to ask us for just an exorbitant amount of money.
Yes, yeah.
That we were like, and like, you know, had it been a, like, I think we went in thinking, yeah, we'll of course, you know, contribute some funds to this project. But like, it wasn't like everyone was putting things in. It was like, it was just like, you guys will get us started, right? And it was like, I don't know how much money you think we make, but it's not that.
Yeah, it changed the, like, this was one of those conversations. And I mean, I feel like it's probably a fairly relatable experience where you go through an entire situation ultimately to realize that like the person that you were communicating with had like a completely different plan the whole time, or they, and then you have to go back and replay. They have like an ulterior motive. So then you have to go back and like replay the whole conversation with their context in your mind. And you're like, oh man, they were really, really friendly to us. And they had definitely done some homework and research. And I'm starting to realize that like a lot of what I thought was just everybody being very jovial was maybe more intentional.
Right. You know, yeah, like, perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
So here's where, so that happened. We, you know, we left, we said, we'll consider your offer. And we ultimately were just like, no, we cannot do that. Sorry.
Yeah. But, yeah.
You know, let us know if you're having a fundraiser. Hey.
Right. Yes.
Anyway, so moving on, months pass and, it was a couple there and I'm invited to a Valentine's Day party.
Yes.
And I'm at the party. And lo and behold, at said party, the guy who had put together the PowerPoint presentation is there.
No way.
Yes. And I had no memory of him.
Oh my gosh.
At all.
Oops.
Zero. Like to back it up, the host of the party will occasionally host just sort of like fire pit nights, and he'll invite a bunch of different people, and there's like maybe a core group of people who's always there, which I would say I'm part of that group.
Okay.
But there's often a bunch of floaters kind of too, and it's always at night, you're always by firelight, and it's typically cold outside, so people are wearing hats and gloves, and everyone looks similar, especially if you haven't met them before.
Sure.
And you're all sitting across the fire pit, and you don't have like a full conversation one-on-one with someone, you're all just sort of listening to whatever.
Right.
So
right. Okay.
Like, I see this person at the party, and you know, I'm like, you look familiar, and because we're at the same place, like, I think you're from that. You must be, that must be where I know you from.
From the fire pits.
From the fire pits.
Yeah.
That's not where I know him from. I know him from the pitch meeting.
Ah,
but
yes.
I'm not putting that together at all. So there, throughout the course of the party, I'm just like, this is like my new buddy at the party. We're just like, I probably talked to him more than anyone else there.
No way.
With no recollection that we'd met before at all. And so that night happens. And then it's been, I don't even know how long since then, probably a month since then, there's another fire pit and same guy's there. And I'm like, I remember you from the Valentine's party and let me chat with you again at this fire pit. And we're, you know, chatting, we're pulling some other guy. We're talking for most of the evening. And that was sort of like my, yeah, whenever I'm at these things, I'm so bad at parties. If I find someone I can talk to for a while, I'm like, leech.
Yeah. You know?
It's like, let's take up half an hour of this party. That's going to be like 25% of my time here, probably.
What I feel like there's two, we have a friend who had diagnosed the two personality types at parties. There's either like the floaters or the leeches.
Maybe I'm a leech.
Maybe you're a leech.
I don't know.
But it's like the either you're the type of person who just like goes and you're like, yo, what up? How's it going? Hey, what's the latest? Like right. You just like going person to person, or you like find your person and you stay with them the whole night.
Now, you'd think, having talked to this person at the Valentine's party and having talked to this person at the fire pit and having been in the pitch meeting, which we already established, I forgot, I would know their name, but I don't.
Okay.
You know, I just recognize I talked to you at, you're that face from that party.
Sure.
And but so as this guy is leaving, because he leaves before me from the fire pit, the host calls out his name and just says, hey, see you later. And then like, I'm like, I feel like the host introduced me to someone named that through text message. Why was that? And it was like, oh, that was before the pitch meeting thing. That was that guy. And it like all came crashing together. And I'm just like, this is a really, I am like, and suddenly I'm just like, if I had remembered the situation in its entirety, like, would I have interacted with this person in the same way? And the answer is like, I don't know, because that was the first time I met them.
Right.
And it's like, but since then, it's been like, I may as well have been meeting them for the first time, but clearly I wasn't.
Right.
So like, I have no idea what their perception has been this whole time. I'm like, yeah, this guy, like, we met and he like turned us down and then he's just been like super friendly.
That is so funny.
I know. Okay,
but this makes me feel better, because like I said, I was like, you know, I left that meeting that day, and I think the thing that made me the most uncomfortable was I walked in and I was like, I love these people. Everyone is so nice.
Right.
Like, this is so great, you know? And I think my great concern leaving there was like, I know why they were being nice to me.
Right.
Like once, you know, it was like that, like glass shattering. I feel like there's an episode, How I Met Your Mother, about it, where like everybody has like a glass shattering mm-hmm. moment about like the other people in the group. And they're like, oh no,
now I can't not notice it.
I know. Yeah. And so like, I think I was like, oh my gosh, like that was like, you know, I think that was part of like what was so like strange about that particular day. Cause it was like, you're leaving and you're like, oh man, like there I was thinking, I'm like, you know, such new buddies, like everybody's so great. And I'm like, no, they weren't being nice, but maybe this means they are nice.
Right.
And maybe I have like I have gone like way too deep into my brain and been like, oh.
But that's exactly it. I was just like it gave me just more like faith and stuff. Because like in my mind, I was like, we had this weird interaction. That's pretty much it. I can never see these people again. It's awkward now. You know, whatever. And it's like, clear. I just completely forgot. Not that I forgot the situation. I just didn't piece together that it was the same person.
That this person was there.
And it's just like, oh, dude, hey, what's up, man? How's it going? You know, how's life? How's your business? What's your wife doing? You know?
Right, right.
The, and, you know, and I have seen him again since, connecting all the dots in my own brain.
Okay.
And it's just like, yeah, just totally cool. Just like, yeah, this is fun. I would hang out with you. And it just seems like in my mind, it's like the one situation would dictate that like it's going to be difficult to be friends with you moving forward. But
right.
Because I forgot and just went ahead as if nothing was there.
Right. Everything was fine.
Everything was fine. So now I'm like, am I overanalyzing different awkward situations in my life where it's just like, there was an awkward situation, plow right past that, we can still be friends.
Right, right, right. Right. No, I think it's such a fascinating, like almost like Black Mirror episode of situation.
Right. I was like, Ben is going to love this story.
I know, I do, because sometimes I actually think this could be like the underlying issue, like not to make this like overly dramatic or anything like that, but like I sometimes feel this way about like social media, where like people are able to like go and share like their thoughts and opinions, which, you know, normally I would think would be a good thing. Like,
yeah.
I want to hear other people's thoughts and opinions.
Yeah.
I was telling this to Alice just last night. I was like, I think my favorite thing about Addie getting like a little bit older is I'm able to like hear her tell me things about how she feels. And like, then I get to know what's going on with her and like where she's at and stuff like that. And like, and I'm like, and I think what I love so much about that is that this is what I love to do with people. I love to hear what their thoughts and opinions are. But I also think sometimes they're like, because the platforms are so charged in the way that they are, a lot of times it like, it's a, like you end up learning like things about people where it's kind of like, we differ on this. I've spent a ton of time with you. I never knew we differed on this and it's never mattered.
Right.
But now I know.
Right.
You know, and it's sort of like, it's like, sometimes it's like one of those things where it's like, I think if I never knew, I would have gotten along better. But now I, it's like this like tiny little like voice, like, you know, like in the back of my head or something being like, oh, we're fundamentally different in a critical way. You know, and, but that's like one of those things where it's like, I try to ignore that completely because I think when it comes down to it, it's like the way that my relationship is with you is what is important to me.
Right.
Like, you know, like if we have a good positive give and take and like all things are driving and like we're all systems go, then like, then the rest of it doesn't matter. And like, so since I've been off completely, it's like now I also, I'm not even fueled by this information. I don't know how or where people weighed in on specific things or if it would matter to me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So even if I stumble across it, it happens much more organically. And right. I'm able to just like have overall more engaging and positive experiences with people.
Right.
Where you're not like trying to like, you know, like tiptoe around it. Cause I think if I had run into the same person, cause there's a piece of me that's like, I want to see a picture of who it is. Cause if it's who I think it is, I definitely would have known that it was that who this person was, that you had run into. And I think I would have been on extreme high alert, like, to the point where I may have like avoided conversation, you know, like all together just out of like fear of it, like potentially being like strange or awkward or something, you know, but maybe to your point, it's just better to just be like, you know, whatever.
Just like, okay, well, that situation happened, moving on.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. This is always my huge divide though, is because like, if to know me is to know that I overthink everything.
Right.
I think that this is going to be very obvious very quickly if you encounter me in any capacity.
I think our new popcorn culture editor, Isabel, can attest to that. As I think she deduced this about you after knowing you for about 12 hours.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It was like 3 o'clock on her second day of work, and she was like,
yeah.
It's like, oh man. Yeah. But I think where I have struggle with it is it's like there's nothing worse than overthinking something and then everybody telling you that you're overthinking something and then being right. And then it's like one of these things where you get this huge amount of like validation, which is great, but then it's
except
also
because
like,
it's the bad thing.
Except the problem is, you know, because like that's like your feeling about it. It's almost like, you know, if you were going back to like hunter and gatherer days and you just started to like, you know, you don't have topographic maps. You don't have like hunting magazines that explain to you like good tactics or whatever.
Right.
If your instincts start to like lead you to this field or that tree or this brook or that stream or something, like, you know, it's sort of like, okay, this is good to know. Like the more that I go out here, the more my intuition is like, you know, like guiding what I'm doing. And that is improving my abilities at the thing that I'm attempting to do. And for me, what I'm attempting to do is be able to read situations and understand the other people in my life, the other players who have something to say about like the comings and goings of how my existence happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you're like, man, I got a bad feeling about this. And then it ended up being right. And you're like, okay, I'm good at spotting when things are bad, except it also means now that like, do I grant my gut that much more?
Right.
Like, it's like, dude, your gut's not wrong. Like, you know, it's like when you have like a negative feeling about something, when you're worried about something, it's like, usually there's like a reason for that, you know? And, but then the problem is that it's sort of like, oh crap.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like what if this is the type of thing where realistically, if you weren't spotting them, almost everything would just go smoother all the time. But it's like, but like what you're spotting isn't incorrect either. This is like the dilemma that I think that I've like found myself in after just like years and years and like weird experiences.
Yes. And I think I can't speak to your experiences obviously, but in my own experiences with stuff like this, there is also sometimes like a certain element of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, well, a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say one of two things. Yeah, either self-fulfilling prophecy or a broken clock is right twice a day.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And it's like one of those things where it's like, okay, you don't get to say that, you don't get to worry about 500 things. Then when two of them are correct, you're like, see, I got this.
Right. It's like, you're granting yourself extreme validation for the, yes, like one out of 100 things you were appropriately worried about, and forgetting that the other 99 things you were worried about didn't come to fruition.
It didn't come to fruition. I know, right. Exactly. Yeah. This is exactly like reading comments.
Yeah.
Where it's like 99 yeah. comments can be nice. Then one comment is mean. And you're like, well, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
This person has me pegged.
Right.
They're the right one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually on that note, I think it's an interesting question. Cause this was sort of like one of these, potentially positive, actually, let me back up a few steps because I feel like I didn't fully address something that you brought up. Self-fulfilling prophecy. That's a curious thing because I know we had a conversation once upon a time on the pop where you talked about manifesting.
Oh,
and if I remember correctly, your belief, because like one thing that you can manifest is a good parking spot no matter where you go, like in a way that is freakishly uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, and this is not like the... Oh, this is just a Jay got a good parking spot and we all know that he gets good parking spots. So this is the one in like 100 situations where it's happening.
Right.
Like, boom. I know everything.
Yeah.
You get a good parking spot. It seems like every single place you go.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that you've said before you do this through manifestation, you know, it will be there. But I feel like we had a conversation about manifestation and I was literally not sure when we walked away from it. I was like, wait, I mean, I like the idea of setting your focus towards a goal. And in my mind, I think manifestation works such that like if you put energy into a direction, then you are working towards achieving those ends eventually.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think of manifestation as like a cosmic relationship
mm-hmm.
where like you think these things and then it leads the pieces of the puzzle in such a way that parking spots like magically open and a golden ray of sunshine pours down on top of it or something like that. I can't explain how you always get good parking spots because you do.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when we had this conversation, we're like, no, manifesting is just real. Like this is just a thing, right? Like is that a fact? Am I remembering your take on it correctly?
I mean a little bit, yes, for oh, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So yeah, where because I think on some level you're like, if any of the worry is a self-fulfilling prophecy, then it's sort of like, okay, there's something wrong with this relationship. And then I think the argument for self-fulfilling prophecy might be like, you're gonna go digging until you find something wrong, and then that thing will be the thing.
No, well, no, I think sometimes it's like causing the thing.
Oh, it's causing. Okay, that's interesting.
So like, for example, let's say just we'll have like random couple out there.
Okay, random
okay,
couple.
So you
yeah,
have
I see them.
Guy, yeah. girl, there they are. Wow, they're
on
dating.
A bench?
Things are great.
Yeah.
Things are good until suddenly the girl has, she has a male acquaintance.
Wow.
I know.
How dare she?
Has a male acquaintance. The guy half of our couple is just like very jealous, just doesn't like it at all, can't stand the situation, and you know, is just like determined, like you this guy's bad news. Other guy, not a problem, not an issue.
Like not actually
just
an issue.
Not just like we're in a group project together, you know. Well, I can't do anything about it. I don't know what you want me to do. I have to get a grade.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like I need you to cut off all and So if the situation would be that the guy is convinced that there is trouble afoot.
Okay.
And so harps on it so dramatically and so much and so often that it's like the act of harping on it creates like an amount of mistrust. It's like from the girl's point of view, it's like, I'm not doing anything.
Sure.
You know, I'm just here. I am not interested in this person at all. You're making me feel like you don't trust me based on nothing.
Sure. Yes.
And that makes you not trust them. And so it's sort of like the more you harp on that sort of thing, it could be like, well, now I just don't like you because you clearly don't trust me. And then it's like, well, if they break up because of the amount of like jealousy involved, and then she dates that guy.
Oh, right.
You know,
right,
then
right.
It's like, oh, see, I was right. And it's like, well, you weren't right.
Right. Not in the beginning. I know. No, right. that's a, and actually, I mean, my mind immediately goes like a Black Mirror episode where I think that like inside of the episode, everybody's eyes are like active cameras that are able to like watch and read situations. You're right, because it is kind of like a strange one, and even in the episode it's like it's kind of hard to interpret exactly what happens. But let me try to set the scene, which is that I think that the husband and wife are having a dinner party, and while they've got like all of their friends over or whatever, one of the other guys at the party tells a joke, and the wife laughs like inordinately loud.
Yeah, yeah. Like 1 second too long.
Like not like extremely noticeably, but like to the point where it was like, it wasn't that funny. Like,
right.
It was a funny joke. Laughing would have been typical. Like this particular laugh seemed like maybe just like a little bit too much.
Right.
And so like, I think then like what the guy starts doing, and this is where it's like, I don't know how to like even fully interpret the episode, because I feel like the guy then starts to go back and he's like rewatching all of these like specific situations. He's going back to like, wait a second, didn't you say you had soccer practice that day? But like soccer practice was actually on Thursday. And like, because your brain is actually able to go back and review your memories, you can prove
like,
that
because everything's practice, literally recorded.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, so what ends up happening is like, he's able to like go through and I mean, then he starts like pushing his wife away because like he thinks he's finding more and more and more breadcrumbs that fulfill the story. And so, and maybe that's the thing. And I mean, this is where it's probably been like 6 years since I've even watched it, but like eventually the wife ends up in a relationship with the person who tells the joke.
Right.
And it's
I think he discovers she already was.
Okay. She already was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like it's already happening. And he's like, he finally like catches on and is able to like prove it through like meticulous review of tons of videotape and like, you know, basically breaks into the other guy's eye cameras and like proves it.
Okay,
pretty far.
It goes
and it's
pretty
sort
far.
Of like he's it's sort of like it, as every episode of Black Mirror does, it ends with like, haha, I was right, to my own failure, you know, to
right,
my own,
right. Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh, you were right, but it's all this is a great like intersection of our two interpretations of this, because it's like, on the one hand, it's like, you're right, he had a feeling and he followed up on it and he was right and he was validated. Unfortunately, that means he lost his girlfriend, you know, whatever.
Right.
But it's also like, clearly this person as an entity is kind of just insufferable in their like it's like it, I don't know if it says this in the episode or not, but it's like probably the reason she's having the affair is because you're like this.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, and that could be like, I mean, that's like any layer or any episode of Black Mirror, I feel like it's a great big onion and there's a million different layers that you could peel apart from a million different perspectives. But that could be like a piece of what's going on. It's like what we ultimately witness is the world where he is correct and has like gone down the rabbit hole, but you're right. Like, it's like this, like, we're catching the story at this point,
right?
But like, we're not seeing all of the moments that led up to this particular moment that may have like been potentially
have
driving,
like pushed her away,
pushed the other person away in the meantime. And then the other question as well is like one of these things where it's like maybe even day one catalyst, it's like it wasn't really like that big of a problem, and if you just shrugged it off, ultimately things may have just continued to be better going forward and that would have been fine. It would have just been this like weird bizarre thing that just existed somewhere deep in your past.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, but had you not spent some, if you hadn't gotten so stuck on it, maybe then you could just get away from it, you know, like, and things would have just ultimately like it's the point of these shows to give you like a weird balancing act of like moral ethics and like what you're supposed to be able to like, you know, whatever. But that's something where the ultimate outcome is the guy is correct, but incredibly destroyed from the rigmarole he's sent himself through.
Yeah.
And the alternative might be a scenario where it's like, technically you ultimately would have been right if you had pulled on that string, but by not pulling on the string, you end up having like a happy existence where you're just sort of like, I mean, it's probably that question of like blissful ignorance a little bit, where
I think it's also just like, how many strings did you, like, how often are you pulling these strings?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
It's like, if it looks like you catch him in the middle of like a, like, oh, this is the first, you know, you don't know how often he's constantly like reviewing everything this girl does or his girlfriend or whatever, or like following up, like, wait a second, wait, huh? Like, you know, how how hung up is he frequently getting on everything?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And I mean, it's like, I mean, we'll have to link the episode down below or something. Cause I feel like now I really want to go back and rewatch it. But for the longest time, I was obsessed with these Black Mirror episodes. I was like, they stuck with me in a way that like I said, I've watched this episode one time ever.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like a hook in the back of my brain. It's just like, man, like that says something. That goes, I was thinking about this as well. We had the conversation last week about like your Dorito theory.
Yeah.
Where it's like ultimately satisfying, like only while you're eating it, but then they're like the Dorito doesn't give you fuel for your day. It doesn't make you feel full. It doesn't make you feel healthy necessarily, but like it is otherwise exactly perfect while you are consuming it.
Right.
You know, like inside of that moment, because you and I both sort of have this same weakness towards like just kind of reality dating TV shows.
Ugh, good old garbage TV.
Yeah, we've watched.
They are very much Doritos.
They are, yeah. Doritos. They are Doritos. I know. I was thinking about this over the weekend because I was like, you know, it's so funny. There are certain things that I will watch and they will stick with me. And it's, I mean, exactly like Black Mirror. It's like, I'll watch those. And I mean, like, I will think about them for hours and hours and hours. And I mean, I could have endless discussions about them. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things.
They pose very good moral dilemmas and, you know, question humanity's use of technology. And as often, the thing is, the question is often framed around a future technology, but it often strikes something that is true of all human existence.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like trust issues, but then introduce the ultimate technology and how does that right. play out?
Yeah.
Which I mean, then I think that the name Black Mirror is in reference to our phones, which if you were to, you know, hold the like a blacked out screen to your face,
it's just
a black mirror.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, so I was thinking about this though, because me and you definitely have this issue sometimes, like where we'll watch these shows while you're watching them, you know, all the players, you know, all the people, you know, all the storylines, you know, all the everything. And then you're like 2 months away from it. And it's like, I can't even tell you who won that season.
Oh,
of that
I know.
Show. Like,
dude, in this last season of Love is Blind, like, yeah, I was like, every single Wednesday they dropped like two or three more episodes and me and Beth would just like binge them and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I can't believe they said that. Oh, and we get to the reunion show, and on this particular reunion show, because the show was like at its sixth season, they had to like all of the couples who had succeeded from the past seasons were invited to the reunion show.
Right.
And like sat in the front row and they're going through them and I'm like, who are those people?
I know. Yeah. You're like, I like, don't,
wait,
I,
which one were they in? Who, what? What did that guy do?
What was their thing?
Yeah.
And it's like, I've watched these people for 15 hours and do not recognize them.
Don't recognize. I know. Some of them, I'm like, I remember those guys. Those guys were great. And other times it's just like, those people were on the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
No way.
No, yeah. I don't remember them at all.
I know. No,
what did that guy do? I liked him. Oh,
man.
Oh. You say so. I believe.
I know. Yeah. No. Yeah. So I think that's probably the case. But it also it gave me a tiny little smidgen of an argument, which is that like if you want to compare trashy reality dating shows to Doritos, it is a bit of a testament to trashy dating TV shows because Doritos are in fact delicious.
Well, I mean, you know? Yeah.
So it's like one of those things where it's like I'm sorry. It is. I mean, will you be a better person? Will you learn from it? Probably not.
Probably not.
will you even remember the characters? Almost certainly no. However, it is whilst consuming. Is delicious.
Is entertaining. Yes, I'm entertained in the moment.
Right. This would be like my argument if somebody was like, "Nah, I don't really get into reality TV." It's like, well, you know what? Maybe that's a you thing.
Yeah.
Because Doritos are good.
Because Doritos are good. You know, when they're at a party, you know, it's like maybe you shouldn't put them in your grocery cart every single week and pop them open every single night. But you know what? There's a bowl at a party. Have at it, man.
Have at
it.
You know,
have some Doritos. Don't deny yourself. Here's the thing about, I think, potato chips. In general, or corn chips, I guess, whatever, for Doritos.
Sure.
In general, the chip industry, like, it is, they're so not good for you, but they are this weird human achievement where it's like, they have done it perfectly. You know, you couldn't go, like, you wouldn't go to, you know, some sort of 5-star Michelin restaurant, and if they had house potato chips, they're still not going to be as good as Lay's. Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They have got so many millions and millions of dollars in research and development that gets you the potato chip. Like, they've perfected chips.
Yes.
You know, like Lay's are perfect. Doritos are perfect. You know, like, you can't, like, they are making an amazing product. It's not good for you. It's good for their bottom line, but the end result is like perfect.
It's a spectacular creation of human achievement.
Yeah.
Which I it's actually really funny because I just finished my, like, I don't know, fourth pass of Project Hail Mary.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I always found to be just like endlessly fascinating is like basic, I'm so worried about giving any amount of spoilers about this. However, there's a mission to save Earth. I think that is a safe enough, baseline.
Yeah.
So there's a spaceship that is trying to save Earth. And there is somebody who is in charge of creating this spaceship. And you're sort of simultaneously watching like a backstory about like how Project Hail Mary, the project itself, comes to be, and then what's actually happening on the ship. Mission.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they talk about a lot inside of it is they do not want to design new technology for this spaceship. They
right.
want everything to be off-the-shelf products that have like millions of hours of usage and feedback and
consumer reports and
like all the stuff. Yeah. So it's like you wouldn't build some type of new, highly sophisticated, highfalutin like version of like a scientific spreadsheet analyzer or something. You use Microsoft Excel.
Right.
Because it has been out there in the world forever and ever and ever and ever. And it has been battle tested and people have like, you know, put it through the ringer and it has gotten better because of it, you know?
Right.
So it's like, it doesn't matter if you have the smartest minds of the world all simultaneously working on creating some new invention for them to use on this, like, you know, planet saving space mission.
Right.
It's like nothing there is no, like, especially when you're on a time crunch, it's like there is nothing that you can do that will ever be worth as much as the millions of hours that people have put into
right.
these programs otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, if you ever read any Andy Weir book, he loves duct tape.
Yes. Like, yeah. Yes. Loves duct tape.
It's like, could NASA develop more effective tape? Probably. They probably could. You probably could make tape that is better, but like, why would you? This works,
right?
This does work, so use that.
So use duct tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, so standard issue duct tape.
Exactly. It's yeah. always so funny whenever he pulls out the duct tape.
I know. Yeah, because almost always you're in some type of like even more advanced space travel than we currently have, but like maybe like theoretically it all adds up, but duct tape still makes the list. Still
right.
worth having
still
on that
works.
Pack list.
Still
yeah.
works.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's potato chips though. It's like, you're right. It's like you could be at a Michelin star restaurant and but they don't have millions and millions and millions and millions of bags produced.
Right.
And there's no way for them to ever do that. And if they did, they probably would create something that is truly spectacular in the realm of chips.
Right.
But I had this conversation, I think on The Pop recently, where it's like, when you go to a fancy restaurant or something and you go and like, you get something off the dessert menu, it's like you are programmed to be like, I am in a special place. I am like, I dressed special for this occasion. It took a reservation to be here. Like me and like my loved one or my friends or whatever. It's like, we are here to have the occasion. We are embracing it. We are like, each bite is meaningful and I'm like tasting it and taking the time to taste it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you try to compare any type of like dessert to one of Domino's molten lava cakes, you know,
right.
that you can order three for like $5.99 or mm-hmm. something. It's like that molten lava cake from Domino's is freaking good.
Right.
It is so delicious. But most of the time you're eating it sort of as like I had some pizza, I had some breadsticks, there's a molten lava cake available for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're not like sitting there like focused on the environment. There's probably other stuff going on, you know, but like, I almost wonder if you like went and put on like a suit and you sat down, you played nice music, and you like put it on like a fancy plate and used like actual silverware, not like a plastic fork, if
yeah.
it wouldn't provide you the ultimate in dining experience.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there is, me and Beth watch Good Mythical Morning every day.
Okay.
At like when we put the kids down, and they have this one recurring show called Frozen Fancy Feast.
Okay.
Where they will have the same food item from across four different price points, starting with like out of the freezer at Walmart to like, you know, fanciest restaurant they can find in LA that makes it.
Okay.
And then they'll have like a, you know, like a McDonald's version and then like an Olive Garden version as like sort of like, oh, these are your four things.
Okay.
And it is,
that's the spectrum.
That's the spectrum. And it is fascinating how, and then they eat them all and they have to say, you know, this one's my favorite or whatever.
Right.
And so it's always really interesting to me how it plays out. And there's like, there is like, there are like certain patterns you can notice like over time where like you would think almost all of the time, like the fanciest restaurant is going to be doing the thing the best and have like the tastiest thing. And it's like, that is just, it is like, it's not true. Like the more the dish has like a title, the more likely the fancy restaurant is to get it right. But the more the dish is like, is like a street food or something, like the more likely the cheaper version is just going to be better. Like if it's tacos, you know, like you can make nice tacos at a fancy restaurant. I'm sure you can get, I'm sure they taste good, but you know where they taste even better? When you bought it from that guy with the cart, you know,
yeah, like, yeah, or like the food truck down in the corner.
The food truck down in the corner makes freaking amazing tacos.
True.
Right. But if it's like chicken cordon bleu, it's like you're not getting that out of like McDonald's, you know.
Right.
That's like a real dish that has a title and there's specific things and the chef will know a thousand extra layers to make it good.
Right.
It's like chocolate chip cookies, you know. It's like, you know what, you almost can't mess them up. You almost can't mess them up
because that, yeah, the, those combined ingredients are just spectacular.
They're just good. Yeah. And it's like, you know what, and at the base level they're amazing. And you can add a thousand frou-frou things to them and make them unique and give it like someone a different experience. But when something's like that basic, in order to make it five stars, you almost have to change the experience as per the thing. So it's like, it's not bad. And they will still say like, those are really good. But it's just like, sometimes it's like, yeah, the Nestle Dollhouse chocolate chip cookies, they're just, you know what? This is amazing. We are like, we don't need to keep figuring it out. If you want the best tasting one, it's there. We can get as different and as fancy as you want, but like, we got it.
We got it.
You know?
Locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded.
Nestle Dollhouse.
Nestle Dollhouse. So I always find that really interesting where it's just like, yeah, if it's certain dishes, you could always tell. It's like, it makes sense that the cheap one is the best one.
I know. I'm trying to think of like where I think this has come up for me, because I do feel like there's like, it could be like, I don't even know, possibly like breakfast at like Disney resorts. It's like, it's very much like you've got like your Mickey waffle.
Yeah.
And like, usually like it's like the, from the carton eggs, it feels like,
right,
you know, or like the bacon or whatever, but it's like you're in this magical place and these are all like breakfast foods and ingredients and stuff, but none of them are like the best version of any of them.
Right. Yeah. Either,
you know, it's like, oh man. Okay. All right. It's like, I think I noticed that on our last trip where I was like, after like 3 or 4 days of the same breakfast, I was like, I'm maybe getting slightly tired of this breakfast.
You mean, on the cruise?
I think it was before the cruise, like the couple days that we stayed in the parks before we went on the cruise. Yeah.
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 Boy, there was such a cruise hack that I didn't figure out until the last day, because they'll bring these little cards to your room and you could like fill out like, oh yeah, bring me these things to the room in the morning or whatever, which was fine. But like, you know, our kids were up at, you know, 6:30 or whatever, and they did these tiny little rooms and they bring this big tray in there, and then like, it's just, it was a lot to deal with. But it turns out if you would have woken up and just walked up to the deck, like to where all the food was, like those places are just open and there's zero lines at 7 a.m.
Right.
And you can just load up your plates.
Amazing.
And all that food was way, way, way better than what they would bring to your room. Like they would just bring to you like bagels and muffins and like light carb things. You could walk up one flight of stairs, get the bacon, the eggs, the meat, all the meats, proteins, whatever you wanted, and just carry the plate down to your room.
Yes.
And I was like, man, I would have, I so wish I knew. That would have made all of my mornings so much better. Because it was like, this is just what we need to like feed people beforehand. But then people got hungry again, so we still had to go get breakfast. And it was like, you know, then you're still up there. You would have gotten the same food.
Right. But there is something really,
pro tip.
It's true. Yeah. But it, I mean, there is something that's also just sort of like glorious about them you know, just bringing it to your room. Like it is like, it is like one of those like just extreme luxuries that I feel like are so incredibly rare.
Oh yeah. You know, I mean, like, it's fun when they bring it in and stuff, but yeah, this, I wish I'd known.
Time.
I still would have gotten the coffee maybe delivered.
Yeah.
That might've been good.
Have the big carafe.
Yeah. The big carafe. Yeah. This was, yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Transition.
Transition. Pardon. Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, dude.
All right.
This past weekend, I finally got to go out on the boat with you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I don't even know if I've talked about it in the main pop or not, but I bought a boat.
Yeah. I know. I was like, have we not brought this up? Because I posted a picture from the boat
with
Luke sitting in my lap and, like, you know, steering the boat, which he was so excited about.
It was really cool.
Yeah. And I was just like, went out on Ben's new boat. And all the comments were like, new boat? What? New? What? What's this boat? New boat? I got to listen to the pop. So I was like, I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the pop, but maybe we haven't.
Maybe just after the final pop. So the extra juicy deets that you can get in that bonus content. But yeah, so I think, I mean, it's been so fun, I think, because I've basically been dying to do this exact thing for pretty much as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, at least since after college, I feel like you have been angling for a way to do boat stuff. To, I think, to the point where, like, you wanted at one point to just, like, find some, like, a river to attach a winch to like pull people on skis.
Yes, there is like a thing that you can, that I mean, I would say you, like, such a small number of people probably do, but it's called a wake winch.
Yeah,
but it was like, I was literally going to have fabricated like a metal frame that had a spool of 1,000 feet of like wakeboard or like water skiing line attached to it. And you would basically start and power it with like a lawnmower engine that basically used its like spindle to reel the person in.
Right.
And you tie the other end of this metal contraption to like a tree so that like the force that it's pulling on you is then like counteracted by the tree. And then you could literally go and like wakeboard or water ski in a river.
Right.
And mind you, at this point in time, while I'm attempting to figure out this extremely bizarre way to do this, I have never successfully wakeboarded in my life.
Right.
But it was just like, I wanted to do it so badly. I was like, this is just going to be so much fun. And it's been a journey. And I think, you know, like last year in particular, so as people, listeners of the pop know, I inherited like our grandfather's boat, which our great grandmother purchased for our dad in 1975 when our dad was 15 years old.
Yeah.
So I've had that boat for, since 2020 now, and we have used it, and it's been like really, really fun, but it is also like, it is an older boat.
It's a real old boat.
And I spent a lot of last summer like working on it and tinkering with it in the exact way that I think everybody who's ever warned me about boats has told me, is like, you're going to spend more time messing with it so that it'll work than you will actually using it, which I don't think was completely untrue, but I did try my darndest.
You sure did.
And I learned a lot about boats in the process, but, I still have the old boat. So it's not going anywhere. But like, there is something extremely nice about having this new one, which is like a pontoon.
Yeah.
It's from Sea-Doo, the Switch.
The Switch.
In case anybody's familiar with pontoon boats or extremely obscure pontoon boats at that. Because it is a bit like of a unique one. But it is, I mean, like in my head, I think especially as like Addie's getting a little bit older, I was like, man, I am so excited at the prospect of her always having grown up with this being like a part of what our family life is like.
Yeah.
Because, and this is a true thing. Like, I struggle on the weekends to always know how to spend my time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not extremely good at leisure time.
Yeah.
If I have like a job to do or like a task to do, I can like focus in on that and put like a lot of energy into it. But otherwise, I'm not very good at just sort of like lolling about.
Mm-hmm.
And so my goal was to have something so that like all summer the family could go out as much as humanly possible and we could just get like some really good reps in on the water and everybody could get used to it. And so, yeah, this past weekend, we got to bring out that we had 10 people on the boat at once.
Yep.
Four of them were kids.
With room to spare.
With room to spare. Yeah. Like, I think it was spacious. It was good. I mean, the boat, it started the way it was supposed to start. It ran the whole day. Like, you know, all was well. I mean, granted, it was a little bit on the chilly side still at the moment.
Perhaps.
You know, as we're just trying to get ready for summer.
I think we all looked at the weather and it was like 70 degrees. Let's go on the boat.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But no, it was really cool because I was like, okay, I had such a fun day just like spending like 2 hours out driving on the water and we couldn't, it was like the floor is lava. It's like we can't interact with the water at all right now because it's so cold.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's no way anybody's getting in, but just to be out there, I was like, oh, this is going to be so great. Cause this was so much fun and nobody even swam. Nobody even did the parts that are supposed to be fun. But yeah, so you got to go out there. You got to drive the boat.
I drove the boat some.
The kids drove the boat.
Yes. Yeah, Luke was extremely excited. He was just like, can I drive the boat? I just really want to drive the boat. And like the moment we got out there, he's just like, can I drive yet? Just like, let's get our bearings here for a second. And then, of course, as soon as you were like, you want to drive? I was like, yeah. And Luke was like, I want to drive.
He's like, okay.
Okay. And then he's like, you know, I'm like pulling the hand because I guess it's a little different. Like a lot of boats have this like lever you push forward to move forward.
Yeah, the throttle.
The further you push it forward, the faster it goes. It's like if you, you know, push it forward, you can just sort of like set it and it'll keep going that speed.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is it was a different thing because it's like it's got like a Sea-Doo handlebar.
Yeah, so yeah, because it's made by Sea-Doo and they've invested all of this money into like the jet ski handlebar that you're used to seeing, they're like, well, we're not gonna not use our super powerful technology. Same thing as the potato chip.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like we're not gonna invent a steering wheel. We know how to make handlebars.
Right.
So it's a boat with handlebars.
Right.
Which is kind of goofy, but it works.
It does work. The tricky thing is that like to make it go then, it's just like a jet ski. There's like a little lever, like if you can imagine like on your bike where you would pull the brake.
Yeah.
But it does the exact opposite. It makes you go boom.
Right. Yeah. It makes you go.
Which is great. And it makes it's very cool. I guess there is a cruise control, so you can still set it and like forget it, right?
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we're inside of what's called the break-in period right now, where it's like for the first 10 hours of operation, a lot of like the additional bits and bobs don't work yet. But then like once you cross over, like once the computer registers that you've crossed over 10 hours, it will like unlock all of the other features. So that's the other big thing we're doing right now is like it's like we just gotta go and spend time on the water so that like when summer does hit, we're not going out there and having to spend the first 10 hours being like, okay, we're here, but now we can't do anything.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's like now it's literally just like go. We're knocking out 10 hours. Like we're just driving for 10 hours just so that we can get the time in.
Yeah. But so what it means in the meantime is that when you pull the little handle to go, like you've maybe got, I don't know, what would you say, like probably like 50 degrees or so of range on the bar?
How do you mean by 50 degrees?
Like when you pull the handlebar,
will move like 50 degrees.
Like 50 degrees.
Yeah,
or so.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
Yeah. So, and that's like, you know, if you pull it all the way down, you're going as fast as you go. And if you let go of it, it will just stop.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Everyone will lurch forward real quick. But so Luke, I'm like, he's like, you know, he wants, like, I'm willing to let him like steer the boat, you know,
right.
I don't want him pulling the throttle, but he's just like, he wants the full experience. So
yeah, naturally,
of course. So he's sitting there and I've got my hand down and he's just like, how do you make it like go? And I'm like, you gotta like pull this thing. And he's just like, he like immediately closes my hand on. I'm just like, oh gosh. And then it was one of those things. It was like, he has no finesse about it ever because you have like such a short range. It's like if you move it a little, you'll slow down a lot or speed up a lot.
Right.
And it's just like if he like makes it go faster really quick and then like panics and just like lets it go, it's like everyone lurches forward and then immediately goes backwards. It's like,
yes. No, yeah. There was a hilarious moment because I was up at the front of the boat with Addie and she's got like her life jacket on. And so she's like standing there, like launches forward. And I'm sort of like catching her midair and then the boat shifts backwards. And so I'm like, because of physics, she just like plops right back on her feet. And I was like, well, that was weird.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we won't let our 6-year-old totally drive the boat just yet. But
Maybe not.
Yeah. He did have. There were some nice good straightaways where he got to just sort of steer and go back and forth some. He loved it. And that was fun.
I know. It's been so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really was very cool. And it's like one of those things where I felt like everyone had this like aha moment about pontoon boats.
Oh, sure. Know? Yeah.
Where, like, growing up, it would have been like, we've been on pont. Like, there was occasionally, like, a pontoon boat up in Vermont where it was like, yeah, we'd go on it. But, like, it doesn't, you know, it's like a floating barge. It doesn't go, like, super fast or anything. And I was like, I remember even people, like, tubing behind it. But if sort of like, you know, the young 13-year-old Jonathan would have looked down his nose at the idea of tubing behind something as pedestrian as a pontoon boat.
Yeah. I know. No, it is really funny because I think that this was like the practicality that like clicked into gear a little bit because so it's the exact same thing as like the wake winch where it's like I'm attempting to create a device that will allow me to do a task that I've never even done before at all.
Right.
But I've had the same like sort of like a fixation on this as an idea where I'm like, what I really want to do is be able to wakeboard because I also like to snowboard, you know,
right
in the winter and stuff like that. And so I'm like, well, this would be so fun if I could like wakeboard in the summer and then snowboard in the winter. And like, maybe I'll get better at both by way of doing both right. of these activities or whatever. And so in my head, I'm like, okay, well, what boats are good for wakeboarding? It's like, well, they make wakeboard specific boaps, which costs like a just crap load of money. Like,
right.
They are so expensive. And it's because like it's a sport that has like so much interest around it and there's so much being funneled into it. And they're like highly capable vehicles that can do all those sorts of stuff. And it's like once again one of those things where it's like you zoom back and it's like, yes, but you don't know how to do
right.
Like even if you had the best tool in the world, you don't know how to use it.
Right.
And I also think I'm aging into that section where probably when I was like 27, I could have still convinced myself like I could probably still do a backflip on a wakeboard. I bet right. that day will come. And if I could go and spend time out there, I bet I could still do a backflip on a wakeboard. And I think now that I'm 34, I'm like, I do not ever think I will do a backflip on a wakeboard.
Right.
I have like, let it go.
Like your expectations for it have like leveled out in a way that it sort of feels like if you could only feel that way when you were like, yeah, like 25, 27 or whatever. It was just like, well, there's no point in even getting a boat if it can't pull me on a wakeboard fast enough to do a backflip.
Because right,
clearly yeah. that's what we're aiming for. And it's like, what's even the point otherwise? And it's like, what do you really want out of your boat? You know? And it's like, you know, like, because realistically, if you're to the point where you can do a backflip and I have no idea whether, you know, you could or not.
Me either.
It's like, yeah. you know, like that's so many hours on the water.
Yes.
you know, yeah. it's like there's so much time to enjoy being dragged behind the boat before that's even on the table.
Right.
you yes. know, if yes. if it even is, you know.
And that was that's my exact thought too, to where it's like, not that I would have any expectation of Addison like gripping onto this particular phenomenon, but like in the meantime, what I really needed was like a family thing, like a way that like I can bring everybody out together, which ultimately like that is my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I love having a way to bring everybody and have them be able to go and do something together. And I think it seemed like as I was like floating this idea out to people were like, pontoon? Well, I like the sound of a pontoon. I'm like, you know what's interesting? Everyone keeps saying that. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, because I feel like a part of me is almost like, even in the ridiculous world where I could have gotten one of the wakeboard boats, I almost feel like people would have been like, I don't know, that's a little intimidating. Like,
yeah.
Like, would it have been too much?
Had you gotten it, it's like, I don't think 10 people could have fit on it.
Probably not.
Like, certainly not comfortably.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, not, I mean, certainly not any amount of bracket we would have been looking at price-wise. But so even in that, in my head, though, I'm like, okay, so imagine a world where Addie does grow up with a wakeboard and this or water skis or, you know, whatever, kneeboarding, you know, whatever right. behind the boat activity, if any, that she decides she's interested in. It's like this could be the type of thing where it's like right now I can't justify in any way, shape or form for multiple reasons, not the least of which is just can't financially do it at all. But like it's like in a world where Addie does, or even the kids, you know, the boys
yeah.
spend the next like 10 years getting good at this stuff.
Yeah.
Then maybe that's when you have the conversation. It's like, okay, the machinery we have is holding them back.
Right.
You know, if that day comes, then you start to have different conversations about right. what's going sure. on in the world. But in the meantime, I don't think we're anywhere near that. And all I really want to do is just have the ability to go out and be on the water.
Exactly. And it's like, I feel like growing up, like, you know, we'd go on the boat you have now, the Mamie.
Yeah.
And, you know, we would pull, you know, dad behind the boat on water skis, and he would shred pretty hard.
Dude, he would shred pretty hard.
I know. And it was like, and that was on that boat. And it's like, you know what? If you could shred that, I'm sure the boat you have now is capable of going that fast.
Yes.
And it's like, probably faster. It's like, you know what? If I was shredding that hard, I don't know what much more I'm trying to do behind a boat.
That's pretty much all in it. This is like that classic, like you grew up like watching your parents do things and you're like, well, that seemed really cool. And it's like I've always wanted to learn. They call it like a rooster tail.
Yeah.
But like if you go and shoot well outside the wake on your water ski and you can cut back so hard that it sprays like this nice big like curtain of water up behind you. It's like, I've never been able to do it, but dad could do it in a way that was like the, like, you know,
it was very impressive.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the height of cool. So it's like, I just want to be able to do that.
Right.
But, you know, even in like the year since, you know, last year in particular, I think I was just like cursed because I planned like a multitude of lake related weekends, and every single one of them had something happen. Either the weather didn't cooperate, I got sick, or the boat didn't run.
Right.
And so it was like, I was supposed to spend, I think, you know, like 18 days at the lake with my boat last summer.
Yeah.
You know, across all these like different situations. And I think I ended up water skiing like 4 times, despite like my hardest fought efforts.
Right.
You know, it's just like, I'm trying so hard to do this and it just keeps not working.
Right.
So anyway, maybe this is the year.
This is it. You know, I'm excited. I think, you know, hopefully we get a lot of days on the boat. And my goal for my kids this summer is like, I want them to be dragged on a tube. Like, you know, that's it.
Yes. Yeah. We can like, cruise.
Just cruise. You know what? Doesn't even have to be like, it could be with another person. It could be one of those like couch tube things.
Yes.
If you exist behind the boat, great success.
You know what we've got? We haven't even used yet.
Yeah.
Is once upon a time we did a duck in a cup weekend.
Yeah.
And we had got like a whole bunch of duck related products.
Yeah.
And one of those things. So what we were attempting to do was create like a Dude Perfect esque trick shot video.
Yeah.
And the idea was that we're going to go through and do all these duck in a cup shots. And at some point in time, I wanted to have the boat out there and we were going to be pulling a giant inflatable rubber duck.
Right.
Like meant for being pulled behind the boat. We've never pulled anybody.
Never pulled it.
Duck. And
well, there we
now,
go.
Now it's just,
bust
it's just,
that out.
It's waiting literally in the wings.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah. We're going to have to absolutely make some good use of that. You know what else this reminds me of?
What's that?
Is mountain biking.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Because it was like, I think like, you know, when we started getting into it during COVID, we would go out and we would ride a lot and it would be super fun. And then it would be like, okay, yeah, we're all getting like pretty good at it. Maybe we should try and go do like Gauntlet or something.
Yeah.
And Gauntlet. Do like these crazy like downhill things. Or whatever. And it was like, you go and you know, like you do it and it'd be like kind of fun, but it'd be like, that was pretty like nerve wracking or whatever.
One wrong move.
Like literally that's how it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people are like, why don't we go to these bike parks, these downhill parks? And you're like taking lifts up to the top and you go and you're like, yeah, you kind of get the feel for it. And it's like, you know, well, let's go to these little jump parks or whatever. And it was like, you know what, when I got into this, I don't think I was really trying to do jumps, you know?
Yes.
It's like they're out there and there's like, you know, if you can do some little tricks and you can go on the features or whatever, like that's great. But it's like, you know, there's like, it reminds me of that same attitude. It was just like, there's no point in, why would you even go biking if you're not trying to get to the point where you can do backflips on the jumps? And it's like, because there's plenty of fun to be had between beneath backflips.
Yes,
you know?
I know. You're right. And it's funny because I found a term and I was like, I don't even know if I have like enough to say about this to like actually bring it up as like a topic on the pop or anything. But like I almost feel like there's a couple of different things going on. The term itself is called an expectation hangover.
Oh, and this feels like it has you written on it.
I know. Well, and that's the thing is that like even in therapy, like or with my wife Alice, both people have referred to me as like Clark from Christmas Vacation before, where he's got this like perfect idealistic idea of like everybody coming together for the holidays and calamity ensues. And you know, it's kind of like, and you know, Allie will joke lots of times that I'll just kind of like keep my like little pet rain cloud with me that just sort of like follows me everywhere I go.
Right.
It's like, oh man, things that, but I think that like there's almost like echoes of my expectations from when I was a lot younger, like when the ideas first formulated in my mind as to like what I thought or hoped for.
Right.
And because so much time had transpired without ever doing it, the expectation for what I envisioned the outcome to be always sort of remained the same. So
right.
It was always like, well, I want to have a boat that I can do a backflip behind, you know, like, or I want to go on a mountain bike and I want to jump like 20 feet in the air and have like the absolutely incredible photo that is me on my bike so high in the air that there is no ground visible in the photo, just blue sky all around me.
And it's right.
Like, it's like I'm flying on my bike.
Right.
You know, but like these are the thoughts and hopes of someone who was nowhere near being able to do all of the rest of it.
Right.
So then like when I finally like reached the stages where all of a sudden it was like, okay, now I'm in it. Now I can do these things. It was like, and sure enough, I want to go jump 20 feet in the air. And it's like, but then you're like, yeah, it's like it needed to fail enough times and sort of like reiterate, like if you weren't maybe learning these jump lines as like, you know, a younger kid where you're building in like some of the muscle memory and the confidence and all of the rest. It's like, we're sort of just like jumping into the deep end quite literally for this task, for this hobby.
It's yeah.
like, it's like you were doing fine and excelling over in the shallows where you were, your skills were more matched to the environment.
Right.
But instead you were like, oh, let's just scale it up.
But because you jumped in when you were 25 and you're like pretty good at learning skills like this quickly.
Yes.
You're like, well, I got it, you know, time to move up.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
But so the expectation hangover is at least the best. It's a book, which I have not read the book, but, so it's kind of an interesting one because it seems like the term comes from one book in particular, but I also feel like I can sort of just like generally understand the underlying sentiment behind it, which is sort of like whenever you're inside of a situation and you've had expectations and those expectations, it's like what's happening isn't necessarily bad. It's just not meeting expectations. It there's a distance between where those were set and what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And that comes with this like feeling of dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that is what it is attempting to identify. It's like it's like what's happening is not a bad time. It may be the case that your expectations were set higher than what they ended up being. But like that's us going out during the pandemic and being like, okay, we have to social distance. Like we can't really like, you know, be going enclosed in environments. But like if we're out in the woods and we're spaced out from one another, it's like we're able to go and sort of have like a social activity at a distance and yell at each other from 10 feet away or whatever.
Right.
Like that's like a way to still achieve some version of interactivity. And we live in an area that's well equipped for it. And it's like I think it's like when you boil it down, it's like we were having so much fun just doing the basic thing. But because in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, but like, how close are we to working up to these big jumps?
Right.
It's like then you're sort of dealing with like, well, today was a lot of fun, but we didn't go off any jumps at all. So like, you know, maybe
was
that's
it worth it.
Was it worth it? You know, like, right. Like, are we really doing what we're trying, like we're setting out to do? And it's like, I think if I were to zoom back or like answer that question now, it's like, yes, we were doing what we were trying to do.
Right.
We were being physically active. Like when gyms were all closed, we were getting some version of like social interaction in
yeah.
you know, some other capacity, you know, all the rest of everything. And we were doing things that were like equivalent to our skill set.
Right.
You know, so
yeah.
And then as soon as we started to step outside of that skill set, then we started going to the emergency room a lot. And
right.
Like,
yeah.
Well, this is less good.
Less good.
People just keep getting hurt and injured in ways that it's like, it's too hard to ignore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think, yeah, just like, I think sometimes if you asking yourself, what do I really want out of this thing?
Yeah.
Then it can be like easier because it's like, yeah, you can have this like idealistic version of it, but it's like that might not even be what you are actually aiming for,
right?
And in the end, or it might be like more unattainable than you realize, or I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say.
No, just it's okay.
Like, yeah,
because I think I understand this. You know, this was like before every like 5K race, even like when I was like a little kid. Like I remember, I think, because I ran my first 5K when I was like 9. And I think that like the night before the 5K, and I may have even talked about this on the pod before, there was like a version of me that was like in my head, I was like, what if I get out there tomorrow and I'm just exceptionally good at this and I win?
And I just win.
You know, it's like, and right. It's like, I mean, and so like, it was kind of one of those things where it's like, you've one, never run one of these before. I don't even think at this point in time I'd ever run 3 consecutive miles before, because the thought was like, well, we'll train up to like 2.5. And then like on race day, you'll let the adrenaline take you the extra, you know,
right.
distance to complete your 3.1 miles or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm just like a small kid, you know, it's like there was not any evidence that would have suggested anything, but it's like, I think I could even like go back to that day in a little bit. It's like, was there any part of you that was like mildly disappointed that like it had crossed your mind? It's like, I could win tomorrow. And it's like, one, no, you couldn't. You were not in that zip code. But like, are you then completing your first ever something and finding yourself mildly disappointed with the results because it like, because you had envisioned a world where it had gone even more superior?
Right.
Because in the meantime, it's like, you still did something for the first time ever. You still accomplished a task.
Right.
You know.
Still very cool.
Boom.
Yeah.
Big check mark.
Right. Like, if I was getting into running, like, today, I don't think any part of me would ever be like, no, my goal here is to like start winning races.
Right, right. You know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
like, and because if that was my mindset, it's like, I'm going to have a really long time with running.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe I would get fast. Maybe I would really push myself, but like, don't think I'm going to be competing at that kind of level. You know?
Right, right. Not going to be very fun if your expectation is winning.
Exactly, like, right. Yeah, but it's right, like, but if game. Like, if you want to get into running because like you want to be healthy and exercise and socialize and like, you know, travel to places and complete races, then like, and that's what you want out of it, you're going to have a blast.
Right, right. You know? So maybe that's sort of like the sentiment though, is that it's sort of like, I think a lot of people like even like entering into exercise, they probably like the reason that you've rationalized yourself into thinking like, you know, maybe I should start working out or something. It's probably because you want some kind of outcome, some type of like, whether it's performance, whether it's, you know, just physique related or health related or something of the sort, you know, it's like, it could be the case that you want some kind of an outcome. And what ends up happening is that means on day one, you're like already like a little bit disappointed that you're not like a lot closer to that finish line. But if you can reprogram your mind a little bit, or like practice, I guess, like mindfulness and sort of be like, you know, I haven't been exercising, so if I can just go today, then that in and of itself will be a win.
Right.
You know, like be proud that you got out there that day.
Right.
And like your goal was like, can I go? Yes, I can go. Boom. Like,
right.
You know, then your expectations have met what your, you know, energy or efforts or, you know, talent are able to deliver back to you.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so all about managing.
Exactly. Yeah. Just gotta manage your expectations, you know. Go.
Sometimes the pop's therapeutic.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like I'm trying to explain something to somebody else, but what I feel like I'm really doing is explaining something to me.
I do that all the time. I'll just like walk around in my house and just sort of like have a conversation. I'll be like imagining I'm having a conversation with somebody else, but really I'm just trying to like work through it for myself.
Yes, exactly. It's like, if I were giving advice to somebody in my exact situation, what would I say?
Right.
Can I listen to my own advice?
Yeah.
Because some part of you has an answer to the question, and if you won't listen to your own advice, then why should anybody else?
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. As ever, be sure to send any feedback that you have over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. I always love hearing from you guys. But otherwise, I think that is all that we've got for today. Until next time.
Pop, pop.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.